Charlie Evers Show is on. It's time that you can listen to eras long bygone. So email all your loved ones or call them on your phone and tell them Charlie Evers is on. It may be terminal wrinkles, it may be Hillary's hair, it may be on top of the courthouse, you bet old Charlie's there. You may be invited to dinner, but tell them you can't come. The Charlie Evers is on.
Okay, and he's on again, and today is a special day here at WWGH. James Anderson, my monthly guest, is here today in great shape. James, you recently did a pawpaw demonstration.
I did, at the Marion Public Library about a couple weeks ago.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Now, where would you find enough pawpaws? They're kind of few and far between, aren't they?
Well, it just depends on the patch. Like the one at Paradise, which is by your house outside Caledonia, I only found one, and actually I brought one with me today. But I have a friend out in Morrow County that lives by the Northmore School District, and I mean, he has tons and tons.
No kidding?
I pick up several pillowcases full of them. So, yeah, it just depends on the certain patch.
Yeah. It's like up at the Winford High School. There's a woods behind there full of pawpaw trees.
Okay, okay.
In Crawford County, so. But, yeah, I can remember as a kid, that's a long way back, where we used to find the pawpaws here and there.
Yeah.
When we were mushroom hunting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, boy. Okay, so now, tell our listeners about what is a pawpaw?
So, pawpaws are a very interesting plant. When you think of pawpaws, you think of, opposite from a mawmaw. Nope. It's a local native fruit here in the United States in the state of Ohio. We don't have a lot of native fruits in the United States. Because when you think, what about apples and oranges? Well, those actually originate from other parts of the world, but we introduced them into America, Ohio. And so it's kind of like the fruit looks kind of almost like a big kidney bean shape. And you can make all kinds of things. You can make anything with a substitute for a banana. You can make pawpaw pancakes, waffles, cookies, breads.
And your wife made cookies, and I just ate one.
That's right. That's right.
Wow, tremendous. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you enjoy it.
Oh, yeah.
And then down in southeastern Ohio last week, they had their festival down there, and they are famous for their pawpaw beer. So, yeah, you can do all kinds of things with this fruit.
Yeah, one thing with pawpaws, you got to work fast because, their lifespan...
It's very short.
Yes, very short. They rot pretty fast.
They do. And that's one of the big questions I always get. Why can I not find them at a store?
Oh.
And the big thing is like you said, because they have a very short lifespan. And once they're ripened, I mean, you may only have a day to even 2 days. If you're luckily three... and you got to use them.
Yeah.
And they're not like bananas. You know how then they pick bananas and ship them up north? They ripen or turn yellow.
Right.
Well, our pawpaws don't do that very well. And so I did pick some. Now, they're not ready to eat quite yet, but I have done some research, and I have done it before. But if you put them in a brown paper bag and leave them in there for a while, they do ripen over time.
You can do the same with a tomato.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Okay. So, that pawpaw you have in your hand looks almost like it's got eyes.
It does. And it's interesting, the one I'm holding in my hand, it had a cluster of four of them. So
really?
Sometimes that'll happen. Sometimes they'll be in a giant cluster, and sometimes you'll find them singular on the plant itself.
Isn't that something? So the time period is fairly short. Now, they start... the pawpaw tree produces fruit starting when?
So they'll start making the fruits probably about late August, and then depending on where you are in the United States or in Ohio, like right now I think we're in the season, probably in the next week or two we're going to be out.
Yeah.
But down in the southeastern part of the country, they're already done. So just, again, timing, location, temperatures. Last fall, when it was really, really warm, both day and night, I was picking pawpaws almost beginning September. And now we're in the end of September, and I'm picking them. So temperature can really influence about the ripening process.
It looks like temperatures are going to stay above normal for a while yet.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah. The other day, Gil Gomez, our weatherman we had years ago, said we would have a mild winter.
Oh, yeah.
Now, sometimes mild winters produce some pretty heavy snowfall.
That's true.
Because the flakes are heavier.
Yeah.
And bigger. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. But pawpaw, my, that's really something. And most people aren't familiar with them at all.
No, no. If you're not like an outdoorsman, or a friend, but that's an outdoorsman, yeah, you really don't know that they're there. And they could be growing around your area. They like to hang around creek bottoms, stream bottoms. They like moist, rich soils.
Yeah.
So that's where you typically find them.
And that's why I tried planting pawpaw seeds, and they never germinated.
It's very hard. It's very difficult to start a pawpaw from the seeds. A lot of experts believe that if you're going to try to grow a pawpaw on your property, try to buy a sapling. Now, it's hard to find a sapling.
Okay.
Now, some certain farmers market, like down in Athens County, I knew a vendor that used to sell them. But unfortunately, around here, the closest place would be out in Marengo, Gail Martin, who owns Natives in Harmony.
Yes.
I think she might have some pawpaw
really?
Plants.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, but you would have to put them in soil, the right kind of soil.
That's right. And you need the certain kind of yard. You don't want to put them out in the wide open. They don't like full sun.
Okay.
They kind of like mostly shade, partly sun. And you don't want them to be exposed to high winds because they're not a very large tree.
That's right.
You know, when we
That's
think right. of trees, we think they're all the mighty oaks. Well, pawpaws are actually what's called understory plants. So they're actually designed to be small. The highest, I mean, I've seen is about 20 feet. Sounds tall to us, but compared to the rest of the tree world, that's very small.
Yeah. I wonder how the Indians managed those because, well, the Indians would have been able to only use them a short period of time. But are there any remnants of recipes or anything that the Indians might have used?
I haven't found anything with the Native Americans, but if you go on online Pinterest, again, there's all kinds of fun recipes that you can do. And my wife found the one for the cookies that you
Boy,
tried.
Boy, that's a good one, yeah.
So I meant to put chocolate chips, but we only had butterscotch chips in our refrigerator.
Well, that's great. Pawpaws. Wow. And now you did the pawpaw demonstration at the library?
Yeah, at the main branch. Yeah. We had about 25 people that came.
Well, that's good to hear.
So a lot of people were really interested.
Well, that's good.
And then I heard, because when I was doing the presentation, the pawpaws are like the one I brought with me, not quite ready to eat. So I told them about the brown paper bag trick. And I had about four or five people that have either talked or messaged me and said it worked. So,
well, good.
So if you want to, after the program today, I'll let you take one home and see if it ripens. And you'll have to try it and give it to your
indeed.
Family.
Wow. Speaking of, well, not speaking exactly, but I used to make shingles down in the hills, you might say.
Yeah.
What county was that? Noble County.
Oh, yeah.
And we just heard the new superintendent of schools at River Valley is from Caldwell in Noble County.
Really? Well, small world.
I used to make shingles down there every year for years.
Huh.
And I got acquainted with all those people. Such nice people.
Oh, they are.
And they were really worldly people. They knew what was all in the woods and how to use it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The Appalachian people. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're very resourceful.
And there was that one valuable root that they harvested.
Called ginseng?
Yeah, ginseng,
yes. That's a valuable crop in southeastern Ohio, West Virginia
that's
area.
Right. And they would fight or die. You know, it's like the mushroom hunters.
Yes, and you know, I was just about to mention that. The two things you never ask for the Appalachian people, where your mushrooms and where your ginseng is.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, those are fighting words.
Yeah. And ginseng by the pound would bring a huge price.
Yeah, I forget about that, but they're the only plant in Ohio that's is regulated, because in Ohio there is a certain season and a certain amount you can pick.
No kidding.
Because if you didn't have those regulations, then I mean people would over harvest them and then
disappear.
So
that's the
nickname for the ginseng is called the green gold, because they're worth a little money.
Yeah, okay. And if you harvested ginseng, I wonder where the market is for that, probably, well, you probably wouldn't know. Or...
But it's the mainly the foreigners, Indonesian, yeah. Chinese. They really highly believe that ginseng has a lot of medicinal properties. And so your collectors will sell it to your buyers, and then your little buyers will sell it to your bigger buyers.
And each gets a bigger bite out of it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. But pawpaws, a native of Ohio.
That's right. And here in Marion County. Yeah.
That's something. Great. Okay. Well, I tell you something is not a native yet. Nope, it never will be. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yes. I saw your message the other day.
It's just amazing. They're in Delaware, the state of Delaware now, too. And I'm talking about the red-spotted lantern fly.
Yes, yes. I've been doing a lot of research. Ever since you brought that up, I've been kind of keeping my eye on it. Luckily, not in Ohio yet, knock on wood.
Boy,
But they're expanding eastward. I've heard of them in New York, Delaware, like you sent me. So,
You just wonder. You hope they don't come this way.
Yes, that's what we're hoping.
They could destroy millions and millions of crops.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at the Emerald Ash Borer. I mean, it did the same thing with our ash trees.
Yeah, so it's interesting. And, of course, the monetary value of everything they could destroy is unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. The Emerald Ash Borer has cost about $1.7 billion of damages.
Is that right?
In the United States, in the timber industry. So one little green bug.
Yeah, you just wonder how they get their start. Where did they come from? Now, they spotted them. Boy, I've got a frog in my throat today. The spotted lantern fly is from China, I think.
Yeah. Now, I haven't read about where they originated, but when it comes to the ash borer, they were brought over on accident. What they believe what happened is the big, large shipping crates that we do, like the overseas, they came into Chicago, and for some odd reason, this bug was inside one of these crates, and the crates, once they opened it up, the bug was exposed. And so, unfortunately, then it expanded from Chicago all the way to Ohio. And they believe by 2002, they reached Ohio.
I wonder, do we have many ash trees left?
Not many large ash trees. Unfortunately, most of them have been destroyed, but the ash borer, there are a lot of saplings, starting to germinate, luckily from the older trees. But, a lot of your ash forests are mostly gone in Ohio, unfortunately.
Now, they did have a spray program underway.
Yeah.
Did it do a lot of good?
Some. It's not 100% effective. Okay. The one thing I read that they is somewhat effective, they put a pheromone on top of the tree. A female pheromone, so it attracts the males. And so they're up in the treetops trying to look for a female. Well, then the birds say, oh, hey, there's food, and grabs a bug. So it's not 100% effective, but it's about the best shot we got against fighting against this invasive
Isn't that
species.
Something, I wonder, is there, if ash is used for furniture or not?
Furniture, baseballs. Baseball bats,
bats, yeah.
They're wood. They can absorb a lot of shock.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? In fact, I saw on public television a tour of the baseball plant.
Okay.
Down in, Tennessee or somewhere.
Okay.
The most famous one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they make them in all sizes. And I bet they were kind of worried then about the ash trees.
Probably, yeah.
They make a... Different kind of woods, but ash is the primer.
It seems like it, especially with your older baseball, but now I think there are metal bats now.
Yeah, I just wonder, does the major league teams use aluminum bats?
I'm not sure.
I'm not either. I'm not familiar with that. I can imagine, though, the older players, they wouldn't use aluminum. They'd want the original ash.
That's right. Babe Ruth probably with his wooden bat.
That's right. Yes. Oh, boy. Oh, so. But now
Scott,
that.
Do you know what my favorite meal is?
No, Charlie. What is it?
A BLF.
What's a BLF?
Bacon, lettuce, and fruitcake sandwich. Good.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time, as in spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Okay, back with James Anderson, the man who heads our Marion County Park District and is the person that does so much in education of what's out there in the great outdoors.
That's right.
Yeah. So fall must be an extra good time for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we got a lot of our migrating animals, such as the birds, monarch butterflies, the dragonflies that, of course, everybody was talking about a few weeks ago.
The hordes and swarms.
That's right. And it's good to have dragonflies. A lot of people, when I was out doing that program at Timothy Lutheran, I had a lot of the moms who were really hesitant. And I said, guys, this is great because guess what? Dragonflies love eating. They love eating mosquitoes.
Right.
And I did a reading that one dragonfly can eat almost 100 mosquitoes in a day.
No kidding.
So, yeah, dragonflies are really important.
Well, you can watch them. They really get around.
They are. They're very ferocious little predators.
Yeah. Now, the hordes of them are gone now.
Yeah, they've migrated.
So. Oh, is that it? Okay.
Yeah.
They go south?
Yeah, southern United States, northern Mexico region, kind of like the monarchs.
Yeah, okay. And so the monarchs, are the monarchs currently migrating?
Yes, there are some that are currently migrating. So the ones you might be seeing could be born in Marion, but some of them might be from up north. But yeah, here soon when it starts definitely getting a little cooler, you're definitely going to see, especially in the evenings, you're going to see a large amount of monarchs traveling through.
I noticed I was outside last night and I saw several monarchs. Okay.
That's good. That's good.
I how about their habitat? Where, in Mexico?
Yes, I think it's the Apalache Mountains or somewhere in that northern part of the Mexico.
Yeah, and is there, have they taken down a lot of trees? Harvested out of there?
I think they used to, and then I think once they saw that this is where the great concentration of monarchs are, I think it's a protected area in Mexico. Now, maybe all of it, but, I mean, probably a good chunk of it is.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. Now, I might have told you one time, a man I worked for called me to his house. He had pine trees, and one of them, you couldn't see the pine for the monarchs. It just coated that.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, something else. We have a pine tree next to us.
Okay.
And I saw a bird flitting around in that pine tree. So I kept watching it, and I finally got my binoculars out, and it turned out to be a yellow-rumped warbler.
Oh, yeah. They were probably just, looking for food.
Yeah. It was bouncing all over that pine tree like there was something special kind of insect in there. I don't know.
They might have. And warblers, a great characteristic is they're like kids on sugar. They just don't sit still.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, on the move. Yeah, and I was surprised because the only other time I heard, well, you've talked about them too, but the bird expert at OSUM spotted one on our bird count.
Okay.
One winter.
Oh, yeah.
Where the trail is now.
Yeah. Yellow rump warblers, every once in a while, they'll stay in during the winter season. They're about the only warbler that does, versus most of them are migrating down south.
So are there very many of them around?
I mean, like when I was at Paradise, I saw a couple different species of warblers.
Oh, yeah, we have a caller. My, just a second here. Okay, caller, go ahead.
Yes, I have a question for James.
Good.
All right,
go right ahead.
You might not know the answer, but maybe you do. But the Delaware Wildlife Area down there, where you go from Norton and you head toward Ashley, and you drive by the old gun range.
Yeah.
What do you know what they're doing there?
That I don't know. That's owned by the state of Ohio, so.
Because they've got that all, they've got graders and everything in there. It looks like it's about 10, 15 acres that they're just working that area all up.
That'd be interesting, Al.
It starts right where the gun range is, like they're tearing that hill down they used to shoot into.
Yeah.
Full of lead.
Then it heads on toward Ashley.
Okay.
Well,
I might ask my friends. I have a few friends that work over that way. I'll have to ask
them. Yeah, I thought maybe you had some friends that might even work down there that knew something about it.
But when we find out, we'll mention it on the air. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Yeah, all right, yeah. I've shot down there, one time. You had to buy a $5 deal to be able to use the range.
Yep.
And I understand there were even men down there with machine guns.
Oh, probably.
Yeah. And it's better that they take their guns down there than anywhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was regulated, but I wouldn't. Boy, that'd be interesting to know what they're doing down there.
Yeah, that is.
Of course, that land floods quite easily.
Oh, it does. Oh, it was horrible this summer in June when all that rain, that was all underwater.
That's right, it was. It certainly was. So, yeah, maybe they're doing,
maybe they might be expanding the range. I'm not sure.
We'll find out, yeah. But, yeah, there needs to be a good gun range for people that like to take their guns out and try them out.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But that hill down there, you mentioned, can you imagine the lead?
Oh, I imagine. Oh, that'd be full of it.
Full of lead, yes. And, you know, I grew up around lead. I probably told you I used to make lead sinkers.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to smell that vapor coming off the ladle when I melted lead, and that kind of had a quaint smell to it.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
And you would think I'd be nuts now. Maybe that's what happened. But anyhow, they're not even using our lead for sinkers now, I don't believe.
No, that they're not.
Yeah, isn't that something?
A lot of the, especially with when for waterfowl, they don't really use a lot of lead because, unfortunately, that contaminates the water, and a lot of waterfowl species, it hurts them.
I can remember when drains and homes were made out of lead.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
And that's where I got a lot of my lead when people had to replace those pipes.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah, boy, oh, boy. So lead is a, there's a lot of good for uses for lead, though, I'm sure. But I don't know what it is.
I'm not sure either.
Okay. Now, out at the Tallgrass Trail, James, it must be so interesting because out there is the where you would find the monarchs and find, a little bit of everything.
Yeah, yeah. Again, a lot of the migrating warblers. Some of the people have been sending me pictures, like Magnolia Warbler, American Red Star, Nashville Warbler. So these guys, they're not look very beautiful. They're in their fall color, their fall plumage, so they kind of look more like the females.
Wow. And to recognize these birds, you've got to be a birder galore.
That's right. That's right. You got to do a little research.
Yes, right. And I notice I've seen the pictures on Facebook, and really neat. I say to myself, these are out the Tallgrass Trail.
I know, right?
Wow, what a resource out there! How's the pond doing now? Do you have that shelter constructed out there?
Oh, the gazebo. Yep. That's finished. And so people can enjoy under the gazebo. There are a couple benches. It's from the Ridgedale Lions Club for the remembrance for one of their friends that passed away.
Oh, that's nice.
And, it's been working out pretty good.
So there's benches you can just go out there and sit on and
that's right.
Look.
Yep.
Good. Bring your binoculars.
That's right. The ospreys, they're nesting on that tall communication tower there
that's
on her
right.
road. So
yeah.
They're at the lake almost every day.
That's something. Really. Yeah, it's so interesting. And now, this wouldn't have been brought about until the Tallgrass Trail was originated and got people out to really see.
That's right, yeah.
Because prior to that, and I remember long before the Tallgrass Trail, it was just a place visited by people that were, like doing the bird count or.
Yeah, yeah, there was very few people there.
Yeah, and then the herbaceous or the people that like plants. All the way from Marion to New Bloomington along the railroad are all these plants. They're not necessarily all native.
Yeah.
But, they're just what a variety.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the asters are coming out, like the New England asters,
yes, they're all over the place.
Those purple ones, yeah. They're beautiful.
Yeah, they're white and purple, huh?
Well, there's the white one are the small white asters. The New England's are the purple ones. And then the ones that are blue, those are New Jersey asters.
No kidding.
So, yeah, a lot of different state asters.
And just a little tiny.
Oh, they are.
I was looking at mine in my backyard the other day. And I thought, wouldn't it be neat to be able to dry those and put them in a frame?
Oh, it probably would be.
I bet you could dry them out, too.
Yeah, get you a plant press.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there's, in Mount Vernon, a lady that wrote a book, and I can't remember what the book was all about, but she was a collector of various things, and she had me out to her house once, and she had collected the Queen Anne's lace and dried them and made them into a Christmas tree.
I guess you could do that, yeah.
And then she also had a daisy, and I can't remember what kind of a daisy it was, dried and mounted in a frame, and the daisy was missing one of its petals.
Oh.
And down toward the bottom of the frame was that petal.
Okay.
On purpose.
Yeah.
It was intriguing.
Huh.
So drying flowers is a lot of fun.
Yeah. If you have an old phone book or any really thick book and put newspapers in between the pages, that can be a homemade press plant.
Yeah.
And then, just put your plants and probably leave in there for probably a couple weeks. And then once they're dry off, like you say, you can put them in a frame or glue them on a cardstock paper. So
yeah, you can get really creative.
You sure can.
And then there's also, isn't there something you can buy that you can bury the flowers in that will soak up, dry them out?
Oh, kind of like a dehydrator?
Yeah.
Yeah, you probably could use a dehydrator, like what you use for your jerky. So.
Oh, yeah.
That would probably work.
Yeah. So all these things are available, or all the things in the wild at the Tallgrass Trail. It's just wonderful. And now, what in particular is popping up this fall? Among other things.
You're talking about like plant-wise? Or?
Yeah, or animal-wise, plant-wise.
So like we said, a lot of the migrators, but then our winter birds, our winter wildlife will be coming before too long. Like dark-eyed juncos, white-throated sparrows, Harris hawks. I'm trying to think what else. Oh, the short-eared owl. So, or not the Harris hawks, the northern harrier. Sorry.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, northern harrier, and then and again the short-eared owl. So they'll be arriving before too long. Once the cooler temperatures will be arriving.
Okay. Yeah. And one thing determining their population is how much food is available for them.
That's right. That's right. And you kind of mentioned about that. If the lemming population, the little small rat population up north around the Arctic is very low, then snowy owls we could get down here in Ohio. So
yeah, I can
that's
remember,
pretty exciting.
Yeah, twice I can remember snowy owl down here.
Yes.
And one was downtown. It was spotted by somebody that worked up in the courthouse.
Oh, really?
And it was on top of a building.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah, and
Rich Bradley.
Yeah, he was called, and he and his wife traced that snowy owl all over Marion.
Okay.
And the last they saw it was eating a varmint on a high tension line somewhere, and then it disappeared. Yeah, snowy owls. I've seen them in Alaska when I was on a trip up there. I mean, they're common up there.
Yes. Yeah. Very common.
Yeah. So. Snowy owl is very white.
Yeah, for the female. Now, if it's all mainly really dark, it's a male.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
So, yeah, they're one of the few owl species you can tell a boy or girl just by appearances. Yeah.
Ah.
And then your females are going to be a little bit bigger, too.
So the male, since it's not white, does it resemble any of the other owl species?
I guess maybe the closest one, I mean, maybe a barred owl, a really light barred owl.
Yeah,
but
okay.
Other than that, snowy owls look, I mean, really different from the other species.
Yeah, okay. Are they a little larger?
Yes, yeah. They are a little bit bigger than the great horned owl, so they're about 5 or 6 pounds.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound very big, but compared to the rest of the owl world, that's a pretty good size.
Yeah, I hope we'll keep our eyes sharpened this winter looking for the snowy owl.
Yeah.
Should he ever come down?
Charlie, do you remember when Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood came to visit us?
Yes, I do. All three times. What a great time we had.
Yes, riding in the popcorn parade twice with him was great.
He made more speedy deliveries that day than the post office does all year.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Has taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is going to help somebody, I'm all for it. I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth, spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
Okay, we're back with James Anderson from the Marion County Park District, and I feel better this morning in the fact that I've had a pawpaw cookie baked by James's wife.
That's right. She's a good baker.
Oh, boy, that's a good start, yeah. 10:46 is the time, and let me see, there's something on the tip of my mind. Now I forgot what I was going to ask you. Which is typical. So what kind of programs do you do in the fall?
So during the fall, I like to definitely do a lot of fall hikes to get people out and explore, you know, since the season is changing. And within that, you know, start to see all the different plants and animal changes that are happening. So,
okay, so now when you have one of these tours, so-called, do you take people on a walk?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And depending on their ability or their age or whatever, they can walk as far as they want.
That's
they can
right.
Go 12 miles if they want.
That's true. That's true. So, yeah, we do tall grass and also all the other parks, Terradyce, Greensboro,
that's
and Myers
right.
Woods.
So. Yeah. So how's activity at Terradyce?
It's kind of half and half. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. But overall, Terradyce seems to be pretty good.
Yeah, it's almost an undisturbed area because people don't know it's back there hardly.
That's right.
And I wonder the people that live back there, if they saw a car coming down their road, they, ooh, better watch.
They might.
But anyhow, Terradyce is on the extension of the Marion Williamsport Road, actually.
Yep. Yes, yeah, right off 746.
Yeah, and we have a caller coming.
Oh, got a caller.
Yeah. Okay. Caller, go ahead.
Yeah, Charlie, ask him if anybody's been finding any end of the woods mushrooms.
Oh, okay.
End of the woods.
Okay, well, we'll let you know.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
End of the woods. I've never heard of that. I've chicken of the woods.
Really?
I see that quite often. At One Park Terradyce, I've seen a few. Mount Gilead State Park, I saw quite a few. Those are edible.
You know, I had, every year, I have these chanterelles come up.
Oh, yeah.
A great big glob of them. But they were too close to the fence this time, and I was afraid they had been dewed upon by a dog. And I've eaten them before.
Okay.
Really delicious.
Yeah. Puffballs, they're about to come into season.
Yes. But pick them while they're small.
That's right.
You don't want a large puffball because you'll have worms galore.
Oh, I bet.
You know, a lot of people over the years, and I maybe mentioned this, would bring me a huge mushroom. And so I would take it home and open it up, and it would be full of these light green bugs. Oh, my. I don't know what kind of bug they are. Probably no one studies that part. But they just love those mushrooms.
Certain insects are attracted to certain funguses.
Yeah. And now the puffball, to fix it to eat, how do you fix one?
I haven't prepared one personally, but I have seen people doing sauteing them.
Yeah, that's what I do.
So other than that, I mean, there probably are several different ways.
Yes.
And like you say, you don't want them getting where they're really big, because then they're really tough and then they don't taste good.
Oh, yeah. And a little bit goes a long way. I mean, I don't know what it is about that, but you take one small puffball, and that's about all you can do. It's kind of like eating dandelion flowers.
Yeah.
They're sweet to begin with. But the puffballs aren't sweet, of course, But there's something about it, you can fill up fast.
Yes, yeah.
But I do, I slice them, put them in a skillet with some olive oil and salt and butter or whatever, and simmer them for a while, and they come out pretty good.
Okay.
Lots of bugs are gone.
Yeah.
Oh, but I'm sure it would kill the bugs if you sautéed them. And now, I'm sure you're familiar with that new industry coming to Marion.
Oh, with the flies, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. I was talking to Ted Graham the other night, and he was explaining how they'll keep the flies there in cages.
Okay.
And then through a conveyor belt, the output of these flies, the larva, comes on a conveyor belt. Then okay. That's dried and pressed into and feed okay. for animals.
Interesting.
And the what the flies eat will be remnants from the poet company.
Oh, yeah.
Kind
of like their leftovers.
Yeah. And then Reconserve, which is a company in Marion that takes leftover products from different industries. No meat, mostly yeah. Flour-based products.
Okay.
And they process them into animal feed.
Well, I guess that's the way to reuse and recycle.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it'll be a complete recycling deal.
That's great.
And that's in the longest building there in the Marion Power Shovel on David Street.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And that building has been really re-upped, you might say, to accommodate this company from Canada that's coming in.
Okay.
It probably won't be in operation until maybe early next year.
All right. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it will. And,
I wonder if they'll give tours.
I bet they'll do tours.
I'd love to see that.
Oh, yes. And the thing is, knowing the how some people regard things, I've had people complaining already about flies.
Oh. Yeah.
They think they've got flies out there already, but that won't be the case. And even when they have flies, they'll be kept confined.
Yeah. Well, you should tell them to say, get some dragonflies around your area. They'll eat all the other bugs.
Yeah, right. But anyhow, this operation won't be in use until next year.
Okay.
Sometime. And it's really unique.
Hmm.
And it's going to be huge. I mean, the extent of its operation, my land.
You know, I've raised animals for a long time, and I guess I've never heard of feed made from flies.
Yeah, and the from the dried larva of flies.
I guess
yeah.
It would give good protein, I guess.
Oh, it sure would, yeah. And it's kind of like chickens that eat, free range.
Yeah.
They pick up stuff off the ground and eat, and then we eat the eggs and the chicken.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. In this case, I think it goes into animal feed.
Okay.
And should be really interesting.
Wonder if they'll sell that Roe King.
Yeah.
Once it's ready.
I bet so. I just bet. And I think this company already has a product on the market that is available, I think I heard locally. I don't know. I don't know the name of it or anything like that.
Okay.
But it's good animal feed.
Huh.
And I suppose for, I don't know, dogs or whatever.
I would say poultry mainly.
Yeah. So, and that's good to see coming to Marion, something that is good for the environment.
That's really. Right. That's yeah. right.
And so, let me see. The time right now is 10:53. Anyone else with a question, let us know. Like I said, I've seen some monarchs. I'm about ready to harvest my milkweeds.
Oh, that's great.
They're drying. The pods are drying.
That's Yeah, and yeah. Why we're talking about that, I think I've told you before, we are
That's
part of
right.
that program.
Yeah.
And we will have several milkweed collection programs for October.
Well, that's something.
And yeah. So and when you're talking about when is the right time to pick a milkweed, you have to make sure it's dry. It's usually brown, not always, but usually.
Yeah.
But the big thing, if you can barely squeeze the sides and it cracks open like a peanut, that tells you when it's ready. If it's really squishy, feels really moist, it's not ready.
Or if it's covered with red bugs.
That's right. Now, those large milkweed bugs, they don't do a lot of damage, but there's little orange ones, little aphids. Now, they can cause some harm on a milkweed.
Oh, okay. But all my milkweed plants are coated with those red bugs. And
oh, yeah.
I don't know the name of them.
They're called large milkweed bugs.
Is that right?
Yep, very simple name. You have large milkweed bugs.
Yeah, and they must love that. And yep. They're the only maybe the only insect that doesn't get poisoned.
Well, I mean, there are several insects that they'll eat the milkweed plant. I mean, of course, the monarch, caterpillar, large milkweed bugs, those aphids they talked about, and the I know I butcher this, but the tussock moth.
Oh, the tussock moth, yeah.
Yeah. They'll eat milkweed.
No kidding.
Yeah, so there's about four or five different species of insects that do eat milkweed. It's not just monarchs.
I wonder if the milk in the milkweed plant could be processed into anything.
I don't think so. They contain toxins. And I don't know if we were to extract those toxins, maybe, but that's what, like, with the whole monarch relationship. So the caterpillar eats it, and then it makes them distasteful. So when predators would eat a butterfly or a caterpillar, then they'll say, okay, well, I'm not going to eat another one. They taste really bad.
That's interesting, yeah. Oh, boy. I know what I was on the tip of my tongue just a little while ago. I was given a birthday present of a bee house.
Oh, bee house, okay.
And
bees?
I'd never heard of mason bees before.
Mason bees, okay.
And mason bees are like a small bumblebee. They don't sting.
Okay.
But I keep seeing these, especially at Menards, these nests with little tubes in them.
Oh, yeah, they're called pollinator hotels.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And the mason bee... And you can look him up on the internet. It's quite interesting. You've got to put these where there's a mud puddle occasionally.
Yeah.
The mason bees go down, pick up the mud, then they lay their eggs and seal up the tubes.
Okay.
And then later on, of course, in the spring or whenever, they
hatch out. Okay.
They hatch out, yeah. And I kept seeing these, and I kept thinking to myself, somebody's pulling something on someone. And all of a sudden, I get one for my birthday. And I thought, what? And then I looked it up. And, of course, they have instructions on these mason houses. But if you wonder, when you go in a store and you see a birdhouse with no front on it, but just tubes.
Yep.
That's the mason.
Yeah, I remember I went to a workshop and they were talking about those. They're called pollinator hotels. And it's not just for mason bees, it's for other bees and wasp species as well. So
yeah, I bet a wasp would like a small wasp.
Yeah.
Now, there are different kinds of the bald-faced hornet, too.
Oh, yeah.
He's pretty nasty, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. And then the black-faced hornets, those are the ones that make those giant hives.
Oh, yes. I had one in the top in our attic.
Oh, no.
And it was huge. I mean, it was 4 feet across or so.
Yeah.
And I thought, what's going to happen when they... But this was in the wintertime, and they were all dead or gone.
Yes, or that, or sometimes they'll dormant as adults, and they'll stay in there.
Uh-huh.
Or they'll leave the larvae, and then once it gets warmer, then they'll hatch out.
No kidding. Okay. But, boy, they can really grow some big nests.
They can.
Just think of all the fiber. What do they chew to make that?
They got their mandibles that, I mean, they're able to chew, but they're able to extract that out of their bodies. So.
Wow.
Just a natural material.
Yeah, that is something. My goodness. And then a hornet's nest is the same composure, isn't it? The same material?
Yeah.
So what
kind of like a papery substance.
Yeah, right. And so the hornet must get his... they must look all over for stuff they can chew up and make those hornet's nests.
I think so. I have to research how they do that exactly.
But the one thing, you don't want to take a hornet's nest down in the warm weather.
No. what I recommend, if you have a problem and if you want to get rid of them, do it at night. And this is for bees, wasps, because bees and wasps and all, they can't see very well. So spray,
really?
Yeah, spray them at nighttime. Don't do it in the day or they'll chase you down.
Well, now that's interesting. Now they say, too, if people have problems with yellow jackets, now a yellow jacket, they can put a hole in the siding of your house. They can even get in your house and come through the plaster.
Oh, okay.
And I know I've talked to some ladies who said, I got yellow jackets in my kitchen, and they're coming through the wall.
Oh.
So there's all kinds of things out there, James.
I've heard of cucumbers.
Yeah.
It's a natural deterrent against yellow jackets.
Well, I've got a cucumber plant that produced 3 cucumbers this year.
Oh, okay.
Pollination was the lack of it.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to break. We'll be back with more from James Anderson. We'll be talking about what's available for you in the Marion County Park District. And believe me, there's a lot of different locations of great habitats for you name it. But we'll be back here in a few seconds.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP Marion, Ohio. For guests like the 40th Treasurer of the United States, Marion.